Elizabeth Blick. Elizabeth is passionate about organic living and helping us to access some great ideas to help us build a more sustainable lifestyle in a culture that is very obsessed with throwaway convenience. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you.
So Elizabeth, just so we can get to know you a little bit better, tell us who's in your family.
I have a husband and four children.
Oh, lovely. Excellent. Yeah. Sounds like me.
And none of them, are apart from my husband, are at home anymore. So.
Oh, wow. No,
freedom.
That's not like me. excellent. So, Elizabeth, you're talking to us about sustainability today. So, tell me, what's your favourite outdoor activity?
I love walking. And I love walking in the bush. And I love kayaking. But I have not been out in the kayak for quite some time. I just have not made the time to do that. But yeah. Kayaking and bushwalking.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely. Excellent. That sounds like fantastic. Very peaceful things to do. Yeah, absolutely.
Very few people around. I need space.
Yeah, so lovely. Nice way to do
get out in the kayak where there's nobody.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. Now, thinking back to 2019, what was the most interesting thing that you did or happened in your life in 2019?
Professionally, what we did was I'm an environmental consultant, and professionally we had finished a major project for the New South Wales EPA, and that was responsible for diverting about 20,000 tonnes of waste on the Central Coast.
Wow.
So that was a huge achievement, and we've successfully completed that project and hopefully get paid soon.
Oh, that's fantastic. What an achievement. That sounds absolutely wonderful. And how great for the environment as well.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. And looking forward into this year, into 2020, what are you looking forward to most?
Oh, that's going to come out in one of my talks. So that's
lovely. Excellent. Well, I will leave you to it then. And we'll see you back here shortly. And thank you so much.
That's okay. Is this microphone where it should be? Does it need to be further down? It's fine? Okay.
I think Greg will come and move it for you.
Should I be speaking into it? Like clearly? Yeah, okay. All right. Ooh. Living in harmony with our environment. I had to give a bit of a chuckle after I'd submitted the title for this talk, because the word harmony and me have a bit of a special relationship. I grew up in a very musical family. My father was one of nine children, and apparently each one of those nine children played a musical instrument very proficiently. So music was very important to him. Our house was filled with music. He belonged to a music club that brought LPs in on a regular basis, and I remember just washing up dishes, doing household chores, often just singing with the rest of the family, a cappella or with music. Piano lessons were also compulsory. And I remember the yearly trips on the train with the piano teacher down to the conservatorium to do our yearly music exams. Until the stage where my older brother, who's 5 years older, decided that he was going to have a little bit of self-determination, and he says, I'm not going to learn the music, I'm not going to learn piano anymore. So I thought that was the right time for me to put my hands on my hips and say, and neither am I. Well, I think Mum and Dad realised that they were throwing good money after bad, and they actually allowed me to stop, which was quite a feat. Both of my older sisters did whatever grades known to man. Both of them, I think, at some stage actually taught the piano, but I stopped at grade four, freedom, until I got married. And I married into a very musical family. They could all sing just beautifully and often performed in public with their voices. One actually is now a professional singer-songwriter. And I realised that I was missing out on something. So what I decided to do when I was pregnant with my third child is that I would learn the cello. And you know how there's supposed to be this beautiful thing that happens with a child developing in utero when they're surrounded with beautiful music? Well, I regret to acknowledge that this particular child is not perhaps the most musically challenged, but at least the least musically inclined. And I think it had something to do with my cello playing. So I'm going to park the word harmony to one side, and we're going to be dealing with the environment. We'll come back to harmony a little bit later, but let's look at the environment. And as I thought about this talk, I realised that there's three main types of environments. It's our physical environment, so the earth, air, water, the things that impact on those things. There's our social environment and our spiritual environment. Now, I've looked at your program and I've seen that there are many talks like this morning's on family, on values, on beliefs, on anxiety. So I'm going to leave the social and the spiritual to the side for a little while. And I'm going to be concentrating on the physical environment. But I do want to acknowledge that there is considerable interplay and relationship between the social and the spiritual with the physical. Before I begin, though, has anybody over the last 4 weeks either bought, eaten, or wasted? No, if they have not, sorry, either bought, eaten, or wasted too much. Is there anybody who has not done that over the last 4 weeks? Because if so, you're more qualified to give this talk and I can sit down. No takers? Bummer. Okay. So, a few statistics. About a generation ago, our house sizes, the footprint that we had, was about 180 square metres. The latest statistics say that it's about 230 square metres. The amount of occupants in that house used to be about 4.5. It's now shrunk to 2.6. So we're living in bigger houses with fewer people in them. What we put in them? There used to be one telephone per family, a couple of TVs. Now, I don't even think that we can count how many telephone screens each of us have, let alone what we have as a family. Self-storage is just booming, that industry, simply because we don't have enough space. Even when we've got larger houses, we don't have enough space to put the stuff in. And let's talk about waste. When I was a child, our waste went out in a 60-litre willow bin. Admittedly, that was all sorts of waste, apart from the garden waste. Now on the Central Coast, we have 360 litres collected every week. And people think that because we are recycling more, because admittedly we are, the fact is that we're actually consuming and wasting much more than ever before. And so today what I want to be able to do is to unpack the physical environment and give us 5 practical steps to help us all on that journey, because I think that sustainability is a journey. It's not a destination. We can never actually arrive and say we are now 100% sustainable, because I think as new information and new technologies become available, there are better ways of actually doing things. So I want to encourage us all to begin that journey or to progress along that journey, because some are starting from scratch and some are needing to progress a little bit further, but to give you some ideas, some practical ideas that we can actually apply to move us further along that journey. So let's look at the physical environment. A physical environment essentially consists of 2 components. One, the built environment, the things that are out there. And then the second component is the personal, the things that are on and in us. There's a number of elements in each of the built and the personal environment that are consistent, a number of principles that we need to think about. One is the design. Okay, how is whatever we're talking about designed? And secondly, the materials. So where have the materials been sourced? What has actually been done to that product to get it to us? And what is going to happen to it after we're finished with it? So design and materials. So built environment. Primarily, it's our homes and what we put in them. Our homes, how are they designed? what materials are we using? In the design, we can look at being solar passive. That means that the orientation of the house is such that we can capture as much light and heat when we need to, and protect it from that solar energy when we don't need to. When we were living in Victoria, we actually had a conservatory in the very middle of the house. It was a glass house with plants in it, and it was designed to capture the warmth from the sun in the winter, and the warm air circulated through the house and was brought back into the middle, into that conservatory. In the winter, the opposite thing happened. Okay, so that you could put the shade down over the glass, it would not generate any heat, and you had this beautiful cycling of cool air. The conservatory was actually a really cool place. Eaves, windows, you know, where they're positioned in the house, the type of angle that the eaves are on, the length of the eave, they're all parts of being solar passive. And when the sun energy does come through, let's look at our thermal mass. Are we capturing and storing that energy? And so it can radiate out when we need it. We can look at solar energy or alternative sources of energy, all those sorts of things in the built environment, the physical environment, and our homes. Now, when we look at what we put inside our homes, our hard furnishings, the tables, the chairs, the sofas, the beds, what sorts of materials are we actually using and choosing, and how are they going to be treated at the end of their life? What about the toys that we buy? Are we going to be choosing the toys that are the cheapest but will spend the rest of their life in the landfill because they've broken so quickly? Or do we choose for durability? The same thing with the soft furnishings. Natural is not always best. Sometimes it's the least resilient. So sometimes something that can last for maybe 10 years is a better product at the end than something which might be cheaper and even natural, even though it might be natural. So think about those sorts of things. And then it comes to cleaning products. Did you know that some microfibers actually produce nanoplastics, which will go into our waterways when you've washed them? And, I think that sometimes we need to have a look at that trade-off between, am I going to be using less chemicals, or am I going to be deliberate about which chemicals that I do use for the cleaning? So we've got our built environment and we've got our personal environment. Personal environment are the clothes we wear, the foods we eat. Again, do we decide to look at things that will last just for one season and then throw away to either the op shop or into the bin? Or do we choose for the long haul, and use our clothes until they wear out? Is there anybody here who actually waits until and uses their clothes until they do wear out before they decide to buy a new set? Couple, fantastic. I do commend you. And again, the food that we eat. There is just so much food waste that happens. I think the statistic is that over 40% of our general waste is food waste, which is staggering. It's certainly not in my household. But how do we select our foods? Do we go for the cheapest possible product? Or are we going to deliberately look for the products that have been sustainably either harvested or somehow we know that the farmer has actually been looking after and being responsible with the farm management practices? How involved do we allow our children to get in the food production? And how do we talk and communicate all of that with our children? We all know about food miles, how long it takes for a banana or mango or lychee to come from Mexico to Australia. But what about the end of life? What are we doing with our products when we don't need them? Are we shopping and preparing food to minimise the amount of waste? Or are we simply not concerned, put it in the bin and let it rot in the landfill? Because in landfill, food will putrefy. And when food putrefies, it generates methane. And methane is a greenhouse gas, which is, some say, 21, 23, 25 times more potent than carbon dioxide. I heard recently that somebody said it was 35 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, but let's stick with the low 20s. So there are certain things that can be done with our food, and we can think about that. So what can we do? 5 steps. I've actually got a little prize for anybody that can remember the 5 steps at the end of the talk. There's 5 steps and 2 questions, that I, and no cheating, no writing down of notes. So the first step, I'm a great fan of Stephen Covey. He always begins with the end in mind. Know what it is that you are shooting for. Establish a goal, and that goal might be, I'm not going to buy any new clothes, apart from underwear, this year. Or it might be that we're going to be looking at our energy bill and that we say, I'm going to reduce my energy by 50%, or I'm going to be reducing my plastic waste by 30%. Remember, goals need to be SMART: specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-based. So know where you're going to be starting and write down what that goal is. Second point, measure. Know where your what your baseline is and where you're starting. So it could be that you look at your energy bill and say, well, this month, this is how much we've used. By this time, in 6 months, 10 months, 12 months, this is where I want it to be. Or if it is selecting clothes as your challenge, it might be that you want to create an inventory of what you do have, take a photograph, or reduce the amount of appliances that you do have, or tools. So think about what it is and how you're going to measure that. Third point, do the research. Understand the choices and why you're actually going to be embarking on this particular challenge. And the very first question that I want you to ask yourself, if there is no other thing that you remember from this talk, I want you to remember this one question. It is, do I need it? 4 simple words. And no joke, as I was writing down that little phrase, I saw on my desk my mother's telephone number come up. And normally it's, Elizabeth, I'm in a train, I need to get to this particular hospital by this particular time, how do I get there? So I answer it and she says, Elizabeth, I'm in a shopping centre, there's a special on saucepans. I was thinking I was wanting a saucepan and it's only $50, it was this much. And I came back and I said, Mum, do you need it? I've been thinking about it though and it's only $50. Mum, do you need it? Put it aside, Mum. I'll ring back later. Phone down. So ask yourself, do I need it? Now, if the answer is no, fantastic. You've saved yourself some money. And what I suggest you do is you establish a chart, call it a resistance chart or something, to document what it is that you've resisted purchasing. So it could be that you've resisted saucepan, $50, put the $50 in a piggy bank or an account, or do something special that will remind you of give you a bit of morale boost to say, yeah, I can do this. So if the answer is no, if the answer is yes, what are the alternatives? The sharing economy is just booming as well. Uber, GoGet, a lot of our tools are now being shared by our children who have now moved out. But there could be a community. There are communities that actually share resources and tools. Toy libraries are a great resource. We don't all have to have these toys, and they're great to be able to exchange new and interesting toys, with products that you wouldn't necessarily be able to afford yourself. So think about sharing. Think about secondhand, right? Op shops, online. There could even be my favourite, which is, I call it the street store. It's the hard waste. When my children were at home, they actually banned me from picking up any more stuff. I say, it's free and I could use it one day. But now that they're all gone, it's fantastic because now I can start just collecting things.
You need it.
One day I will. And what's even better is that I'm about to get a daughter-in-law in a couple of months that loves picking up stuff from the side of the road. So I think, yes, I pity my son. So, and often secondhand stuff comes with a bit of a story. No joke, last Sunday I picked up the mother of all chairs on the side of the road, and I saw it and I stopped, put on the brakes, and I got out of the car, and there were these two blokes standing in the nature strip. And I said, "Is that really hard waste?" And they said, "Yep." And then they gave me this story, and I think, "Wow, isn't that a great find?" And I find that sometimes when we do source things, I know of a colleague that sourced everything for her child, her newborn child, secondhand, and it came with stories that said, "Wow, you know, my son, when he was born, this is what happened." And it builds this richness and this social aspect of it too. So, second question of that third point is, if I do really need it, what are the environmental results or impacts that this particular product does have? And what is it now, as well as in the future, as well as how it was processed? So think about the total life span of that particular product, and think about the embedded energy, where it's come from, who made it, and then the use that we have out of it, as well as at the end of life. When you install those solar panels, what's going to happen to those solar panels in 5 years? When you choose your carpets, did you know that you can have systems where the industry takes it back and will actually recycle it if you buy their product again and it's 100% recycled? Or a system where you can replace certain sections of the carpet. The ones that are worn out can be replaced, and you can keep the stuff that's still intact. So there are many things that we actually can do if we just do the research. Fourth step, implement the action. Not good enough just to have the goal, do the research, or measure it, do the research, but actually start. And this, I think, is where the fun begins, because here is where we can incorporate the social aspect and the spiritual. So when you have your goal, think about how you're going to achieve that goal, who else you're going to be incorporating with that. If you've got somebody that with a similar goal as you, fantastic. You know, work on that together as a little project. Or start a community group. You could start workshops on upcycling. And that is my goal for this year, is I'm going to be starting a few workshops. So it could be starting workshops on recycling, on upcycling. It could be getting together groups of people to do some sowing projects or preserving projects. If you've got an abundance of cabbages, you know, get a group together and start fermenting and making sauerkraut. Engage others in what you're doing. So whether it's your children, your spouse, and incorporate them, and then teach them the reasons why you're actually doing it, because you are going to be challenged. They'll say, "Why are we doing this?" And then you'll have that ready answer when you've done your research. And if it's not your children, it will be your mother-in-law saying, "You are doing what?" So implement the action and start. And the final step is measure. So number two and number five are the same, because you're going to be re-measuring to understand what progress you have made. So it's really important to understand that step, because it's important to actually reward ourselves and to acknowledge the progress that we've made. So there are things that we can do with our physical environment. There's five easy steps. I want to come back to the word harmony, though. And there's a beautiful illustration in a children's book. Some of you might know it. And it's of two children that are witnessing the creation of a new world. And it's a world which is being created by song. And the song is coming out of a lion's mouth. And as he is singing, I'll read the words. One of the children's names is Polly. And Polly says, She, Polly was finding the song more and more interesting because she thought she was beginning to see the connection between the music and the things that were happening. When a line of dark firs sprang up on a ridge about 100 yards away, she felt that they were connected with a series of deep, prolonged notes which the lion had sung a second before. And when he burst into rapid series of lighter notes, she was not surprised to see primroses suddenly appearing in every direction. Thus, with an unspeakable thrill, she felt quite certain that all the things were coming, as she said, out of the lion's head. When you listened to his song, you heard the things he was making up. When you looked round you, you saw them. This was so exciting, she had no time to be afraid. So I do suggest that there is a song. It is not our song. We don't get to dictate the tune, but we are invited to join in the harmony of it. Using whatever gifts that we have been given, or whatever opportunities that arise, we're invited to join in and celebrate in the order and the beauty of it. So thank you. Is there anybody that can remember the 5 points and the 2 questions before any questions come up? Because what I do have, one of the alternative things, like if you want to reduce your plastic waste, for example, there are so many things, like you can choose either glass, but you can choose beeswax wraps too. And what I have here, I'm an apiarist, so I have lots of beeswax. And I have some wraps to give away, a kit of a set of four wraps of different sizes with instructions and wax. And that will do multiple things. So who can remember the 5 steps? Marina. Fantastic. Well done.
Well done, Marina. You'll enjoy those. You'll enjoy making those. Now, what a fantastic way to get us thinking, Elizabeth. I'm really hoping that we have lots of questions because I have lots of questions. But I'll give someone else a go first. Does anyone have a question for Elizabeth?
Composting. What's the best compost system that's easy to use? Because our history in our family, I feel like it's always just kind of gone downhill, got too wet, you know, have you got hot?
Yeah. Soil is my thing. I'm passionate about soil and about composting. There are 3 essential elements to a really good compost. The first is aeration. You must have your compost exposed to air. And there are certain ways that you can do that. Even within a static pile, you can put in pipes that have, depending on what material you're using, but air is essential. If it putrefies, it develops methane, and there are other anaerobic toxins which can actually be detrimental to your soil health if you incorporate anaerobic toxins. So air is essential. Moisture is essential. You want it about 50 to 60 percent moisture. So a good quality compost, when you squeeze it, you should only just be getting a little bit of moisture out of your hands through your fingers. So moisture is essential. So aeration and aerating, you can either have those pipes or you have to turn it daily, okay, at least daily for fresh compost. Moisture, and the 3rd element is heat. You must get it to the pasteurisation process, and commercially that's between above 55 degrees for 3 consecutive days. So, and you want to pasteurise because you won't make it sterile, but you certainly kill a lot of your pathogens by reaching that temperature. So, yeah.
Okay. So on the same note of that, if you're talking mainly about food scraps and stuff, are you better off with something like a worm farm, or is that totally different with than like a compost bin or a compost?
Both systems decompose.
Okay.
And both have their benefits. They're not the same. But both are good.
Other questions? We'll get you all.
Sorry. Hi, I'm Julie. I've read about a method of composting with just dig a hole in your yard, like on the weekend, and put in your weekly food scraps and then cover it up with dirt. Does that work?
It does work. Okay. Food naturally will decompose. And over time, earthworms will incorporate that into... It's not the best form of composting, but it will decompose there. Yeah, certainly. And it's easy.
Sorry if you've covered this. So if I reduce the number of rubbish appliances I have in my house that I never use, what do I do with them?
Give them to somebody that will need them, sell them. So, yeah... Because that will back out somebody else's need. If they do need them, then they don't have to buy something new. My nephew recently returned from Sweden after 2.5 years of studying there, and he's decided not to buy a car simply because he doesn't want to have something to throw away in 5 years' time. You know, the greenhouse gas emissions might be comparable by using Uber and public transport, but he won't have that product that he needs to dispose of, so better not to buy it in the first place.
So some councils have the, you know, the biodegradable green bags to put your rubbish in or your green waste in. What's your thoughts on that?
Where I've seen it, and this is, I've done a lot of research in that area, that's composting is and organic waste is my specialty. Where I've seen it done by councils, it has not been done well. It does not produce a high quality product. Better to have the green waste separate and then the food waste separate. And a lot of councils overseas would... certainly. In fact, England went that way. They did separate green and food, and then they went through a process of combining them all in the green waste, like some of the councils like Lake Macquarie do. And now they've reverted back to it simply because contamination is so high and you don't end up with a really good product which is of agronomic benefit for the soils if you were to keep them separate. Compost is like making a cake. You know, you can shove in everything and you'd get something at the end. But if you really want a good quality product, you want to be able to manipulate your ingredients. You know, so I would say, yes, if the council wants to go that way, but keep them separate. Because then you can control them. You don't have a huge piling mass of putrescent stuff that needs to be processed. And those processes are more costly as well than if you have a separate system, simply because the volume of green waste is considerably more than the volume of food waste.
You mentioned before that there's kind of easy day-to-day things that you can do, like using glass bottles instead of plastic, things like that. Do you have any other recommendations for just easy things we can do in our day to be kinder to the environment? For example, I don't know, more gentle household cleaners, like any kind of just day-to-day.
Oh, there is so many resources online about sustainable and eco cleaning products, but I can't go past bicarbonate of soda as the best. So I think that bicarb soda is environmentally responsible and it does an incredible job. So get rid of all of the other nasty chemicals that we flush down our waterways. Use bicarb soda. Is the easiest one.
I think we've got one over here as well.
Just out of curiosity, talking about composting everything else, have you ever heard or researched anything in regards to black soldier flies?
Yes, I have. And in fact, there's two guys here on the Central Coast, one at Wyoming and one at Arimba, that produce black soldier flies. I actually contacted one about a couple of weeks ago and he's closed down for a little while. His child is unwell and he's spending time with his family. But the other one, and I'm very interested in black soldier flies. I think it's a really good approach to deal with food waste.
They
They eat absolutely everything,
yeah,
including human waste, which, okay, icky as it is, but they don't give off the smell. They contain the smell. Everything is gone, and it's a closed ecosystem. It just keeps on coming back and back and back.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that it's really good. I'd like to learn more about it. Yeah.
This is a question about the food waste and composting. I've used an aerobic system and had issues with rats. How do you do a good aerobic food waste system, and what else do you need to, like, what's a good thing to add from the recipe? Because quite often I see things like put leaves in, and of course I live in a forest, all my leaves are gum leaves, they just don't break down at the same rate. What's some good things to add to food waste? Because I'm looking at restarting but trying to close the system a bit more from the outside, yeah, so we don't have rats.
Yeah, so you need a lot of carbon, and if leaves are not going to be available to you, that will break down, look for straw. Straw is the most easiest. Look for poultry waste, because poultry waste, actually, the stuff that comes out of the broiler farms, not out of the egg farms, but the broiler farms, they, if they're RSPCA approved, they will clean out their sheds every 9 weeks, and that has all of that carbonaceous material incorporated with, it's not a huge nitrogen source in terms of manure, but certainly would have a lot of straw in it. And if not straw, sawdust.
Okay, any other? Okay, I'll ask my question then. So I love the do I need it? And that's a question I often try and ask myself if I'm out shopping. However, I'm also managing small children who have a really different idea between what needs and wants are and that long-term thinking about things. Can you help us with good ways to converse with our kids and some ideas maybe to help them grasp the concept a little bit better so that we're raising kids who actually have more of that idea as well?
Yeah, yeah. It's a good one. When our children were little, I think that we started when they were only like 7 or 8, we said, look, if we were to... I used to shop at the op shop for all of our clothes and their clothes. But I said, look, and we were actually living in Torquay at the time, and Torquay was the surfing capital, and they went to just the little country school where we were, and we were surrounded by rich people that could basically have anything that they wanted. So they had the name brand Billabong things and the Rip Curl stuff and you name it. And we said, okay, we would have a budget of, you know, 2 T-shirts, 2 pairs of shorts, two pairs of shoes for you over the next year. We would normally buy from an op shop, but that's okay. If we went to a reasonable store to get what you wanted and you needed for the year, okay, this is approximately what it would cost. Now, that's going to go into an account, and that money is at your disposal, so that if you decide that you want 1 Billabong shirt and you're going to go without anything else, then you, that's your choice. But this is the money that you've got to spend. And any money that you don't spend is yours to keep. So that was one way to provide that incentive and to help them realise, oh, okay, there's a limited amount of money that we can actually spend on things that we need, not necessarily even want, but that's a separate conversation. And that there's a reward for them in it, and that there's some autonomy in the decision-making process. So that we had one son who actually decided that he'll do exactly that. He'd buy 1 Billabong T-shirt, and for the rest of the year, that's all he wore. And we, when it wore out, then he went to the op shop.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah. And what about things like toys and things like that are... yeah, whether it's birthdays or Christmas or helping kids think through what they ask for, those sorts of things that aren't, that, you know, that are part of life, but probably do fall more on the want side.
Yeah. Lead by example. And I think there's nothing better than books for children. And we still give Christmas presents, it's just books. When nephews, nieces get married, it's books. I think there's nothing better than books. So, but I mean, all the other people can provide the toys.
Yeah, yeah. Lovely, yeah. Lovely. Okay, one more question.
On that note, just after Christmas, little kids getting lots of presents. How do you manage that with family and friends and who might not have the same values as you in that sense?
Yeah, I've been there, and it was that frank conversation with some of my family. I said, look, I want to have a particular strong toy and I know it's going to cost more and I'm prepared to pay that extra bit if we could get that stronger toy that I know is going to last all of my children and not something that can be thrown out in a couple of years' time, you know, or within a couple of months' time. And so it's that offering to meet them halfway and just to make it clear, it's just that open communication. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. We'll give Elizabeth a round of applause. And I just have a little something for you as well. So thank you very much for coming and sharing all your wisdom and knowledge with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we're nearing the end of our time. I'd like to draw your attention to the feedback sheets on your table.